Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. This is your election guru, Mark Brown here. Glad you could join us today. And I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Right? Right. All right. So it's going to be national stuff this week. But first, we are finally going to give you the results of the mayoral race in Oakland. So this is from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, April 20, 2025. Taylor concedes to Lee in Oakland race. The tally isn't final, but the former congresswoman holds a commanding 53% lead in the mayoral election by Jessica Garrison and Hannah Wiley. Former Democratic Representative Barbara Lee surged ahead in the race to become Oakland's next mayor, according to an election update released Friday evening, and held a lead projected to be commanding enough to seal her victory. The latest tally showed Lee moving ahead of her primary challenger in the race, former City Councilmember Lauren Taylor, with 53% of the vote, compared with Taylor's 47%. Based on the latest tally, the San Francisco Chronicle called the race Friday night, declaring Lee has been elected Oakland's next mayor. Saturday morning, Taylor conceded the election, issuing a statement saying he has called Lee to congratulate her on becoming the next mayor of Oakland. While the outcome was not what we worked for and hoped for, I am incredibly proud of the race we ran, Taylor wrote. I pray that Mayor-elect Lee fulfills her commitment to unify Oakland by authentically engaging the 47% of Oaklanders who voted for me and who want pragmatic, result-driven leadership. Lee's campaign released a statement Friday calling the latest results encouraging, but held off on declaring victory. Oakland, a city of 436,000 people, used ranked choice elections, which allows voters to select multiple candidates by order of preference. The method complicates the vote count, and it could be weeks before Alameda County election officials announce a final tally for Tuesday's special election. If the results hold, Lee, 78, a progressive icon who represented Oakland and surrounding areas in Congress for nearly three decades, would replace ousted Mayor Sheng Tao, a progressive elected in 2022. Tao was recalled from office in November amid deep voter frustrations with crime, homelessness, and the pervasive sense that Oakland is in crisis. Tao was accused of bungling the city's finances, contributing to a budget shortfall that will almost certainly require sweeping cuts across government departments. Efforts to recall Tao from office were already underway when, in June, FBI agents raided her home as part of an investigation into an alleged corruption scheme involving Tao's boyfriend and a father-son team who run the company that provides Oakland's recycling services. That probe energized the recall, which easily passed with more than 60% of the vote. Tao, her boyfriend Andre Jones, and Andy and David Duong of California Waste Solutions were indicted on federal bribery charges in January. All four have pleaded not guilty. I decided to run for mayor knowing that Oakland is a deeply divided city, and I ran to unite our community, Lee said in her Friday statement. The election created an unexpected career opportunity for Lee, who left Washington in January after losing her bid for the Senate in last year's primary to Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, who went on to win the seat in Oakland in November. With Oakland in sudden need of a mayor, a broad coalition of business groups, labor organizations, and elected leaders spent last fall calling on Lee to run in the April 15 special election and save the city from collapse. Though nine people competed in the race, Taylor, a business management consultant who was 30 years Lee's junior, emerged as her main opponent. He painted the city as broken and in desperate need of a chief executive with on-the-ground experience at City Hall who could make tough decisions without fear of disappointing longtime political supporters. Taylor represented portions of East Oakland for 4 years on the city council before narrowly losing to Tao in the 2022 mayoral election. In his race against Lee, he received a financial boost from tech and business leaders who tunneled tens of thousands of dollars into independent expenditure committees supporting his candidacy. Lee ran on a record as a veteran politician with decades of experience forging connections across diverse interest groups. She touted the hundreds of millions of dollars she brought home to the East Bay during her time in Congress, where she advocated for anti-war policies and promoted legislation that targeted racism, sexism, poverty, and labor exploitation. Those values stem from her roots as a Black Panther activist and her educational training at Mills College and UC Berkeley. She promised to make life better for everybody in Oakland while vowing to fight crime and encourage the estimated 5,400 homeless people in Oakland into shelter and housing. She has pledged to hire more police officers, curb government spending, and increase transparency into decisions made at City Hall. That was Taylor Concedes to Lee in Oakland Race by Jessica Garrison and Hannah Wiley from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, April 20, 2025. And here are updated results as of this show. Turnout is unofficially standing at approximately 38%. And with the race, with the first round, Barbara Lee got approximately 50% of the vote, and Lauren Taylor got approximately 45%. That was in the first round of the rank file voting. And in the ninth round, which turned out to be the final round, it was Barbara Lee with approximately 53% to Lauren Taylor, 47%. All right, and now let's go on to the other business at hand, and let's tackle some national issues. We're going to start off with the Senate races, and one senator who is standing out from the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, April 20, 2025, A Brave Republican Voice in the Wilderness, by Mark C. Baraback, columnist. Lisa Murkowski, Alaska's longtime U.S. senator, was home from Washington last week, touching base. As part of her rounds, the Republican lawmaker appeared in Anchorage before an annual meeting of tribal leaders and nonprofit executives. Inevitably, the discussion turned to the wrecking ball presidency of Donald Trump and his autocratic and frankly un-American penchant for sissing the government on his political foes. Sicking the government on his political foes. Asked at what she had to say to those living in fear, or who represent constituents afraid of today's McCarthy-esque climate, Murkowski responded with honesty and bracing candor, "We are all afraid," she said. She then paused 5 long seconds, her face a rictus of wonderment and concern, allowing the observation and admission from a sitting member of the U.S. Senate, no less, to sink in. It's quite a statement, Murkowski went on, and another brief pause, then several starts and stops. But we're in a time and a place where I've not been here before, she said. And I'll tell you, I'm oftentimes very anxious myself about using my voice because retaliation is real, and that's not right. It's a fine pass we've come to when simply speaking the truth and stating the obvious and are considered newsworthy, much less an act of courage. But here we are, folks. America 2025. If you wish to be cynical, there are three reasons why Murkowski, whose comments Monday quickly ricocheted across the country, may be more prepared to speak out against Trump than her timorous Republican peers. Trump easily carried Alaska all 3 times he ran for president, but is showing the 54% of the vote he received in November was a high mark is a shadow of his blow-up victories elsewhere. Trump won Wyoming with 70% of the vote, West Virginia with 68%, and Oklahoma and North Dakota with 65% support. His executive order changing the name of North America's tallest peak, Denali, back to Mount McKinley, has landed among Alaskans with a decided thud. A survey of adult residents found they opposed the switch by more than 2-1. In other words, the last frontier is not exactly head over heels for Trump. Besides, Murkowski won't face re-election. Should she decide to run for a 5th term until 2028, when Trump's time in office will finally, mercifully, be winding down. Those factors, however, don't take away from the starch of the senator's spine or her willingness to stand up while so many others in her party cower in submission. Give Murkowski her due. She doesn't shrink from a fight. In 2010, she notched a rare write-in victory after losing the GOP nomination to a right-wing Tea Party Republican. In 2021, Murkowski was just one of just 7 Republican senators and the only one to face constituents in the next election cycle to vote to convict Trump in an impeachment trial for inciting the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Her act drew a censure from state GOP leaders and the petulance you would expect from Trump, who urged some Republican, any Republican, if you have a pulse, I'm with you, to challenge Murkowski's re-election. When Kelly Shibaka, a 2020 election denier, stepped forward, Trump appeared at an Anchorage rally to lend his support. Murkowski won anyway. She may be the state's most popular living politician, said Amy Lovecraft, a political science professor at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. She knows the state, Lovecraft said. She gets stuff done. She's a doer. She's also outspokenly independent, a rare commodity in today's increasing cult-like GOP. In fact, the whole notion of checks and balances, a foundational principle of American democracy, has gone out the window, Murkowski suggested in Anchorage. Right now, we are not balancing as the Congress, she said, expressing concern as well over Trump's attempted undermining of the judiciary. Murkowski has taken on Trump more than once. She refused to vote for him in 2024. She didn't support Kamala Harris either, and was one of the few Republicans in office to publicly condemn Trump's shameful pardon of the January 6th insurrectionists. She opposed Pete Hegseth's nomination as defense secretary and voted to undo Trump's heedless tariffs on Canada. She's also expressed concerns about Elon Musk's wanton assault on federal employees. Things are happening so fast through this Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, the fictive name of Musk's made-up agency. None of us understand the half of it. It's literally piecing it together, Murkowski told those gathered in Anchorage. Speaking on Monday to the Anchorage Daily News, Murkowski recounted conversations with some of those summarily fired at Musk's precipitous purge. Many were in tears. They thought that they were in a profession they've given so much to and thought that they were doing well, Murkowski said. And literally, with no notice whatsoever, they were terminated and told that their work performance was not satisfactory, which was not true. These are real emotions. These are real people, she said. These are real fears, and they need to be heard. Indeed. Sadly, for now, Murkowski is one of vanishingly few Republican politicians with the guts to speak up against the party's rogue president, a brave but lonely voice in the wilderness. That was A Brave Republican Voice in the Wilderness by Mark Z. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times for Sunday, April 20, 2025. All right, here's something regarding the race in Ohio and somebody who may try to make a comeback. This is from NewYorkTimes.com, and this is called Sherrod Brown Weighing a 2026 Senate Bid Starts a Workers Group. Mr. Brown, the Ohio Democrat who lost his race for re-election last year, is forming the Dignity of Work Institute, which will highlight workers' struggles, by Reed J. Epstein, reporting from Washington. March 24, 2025. Sherrod Brown is out of the Senate, but he is not done with politics. Mr. Brown, the Ohio Democrat who lost his bid for a fourth Senate term last year, announced on Monday that he was forming a nonprofit group called the Dignity of Work Institute. The group, he said in an interview, will aim to illustrate the plight of workers in a country where both major parties have forgotten their concerns. Democrats have become seen as the compensate the betrayed party, Mr. Brown said. You know you lost your job. We'll give you some help. And Republicans are the reward the winners party, and that's corporations and the ultra wealthy. Neither party is the make the workers the winners party. Now, Mr. Brown, 72, failed to defeat last year as President Trump won an overwhelming victory in Ohio, which during the former senator's 32 years in Congress, transformed from a presidential battleground to a Republican stronghold. Now, Mr. Brown, who considered running for president in 2020, is seeking to resuscitate what has long been his signature political issue, the fate of American workers. At the same time, his fellow Democrats are beginning to coalesce around a message of opposition to the billionaires running the federal government. His new organization will function as a nonpartisan think tank conducting research about American workers and aiming to illuminate challenges they face in an effort to persuade politicians and the public to pay attention to workers' needs. Not that Mr. Brown is necessarily done running for elected office himself. The famously frumpy Ohioan said he was weighing running for either Senate or governor in his home state next year. Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, is barred from seeking re-election by term limits, and Senator John Husted, a Republican, who Mike DeWine appointed to fill the seat vacated by Vice President J.D. Vance, will face voters for the chance to serve the remaining 2 years of Mr. Vance's term. Democrats again face a daunting Senate map in 2026. Any hope the party has of taking back the chamber, which Republicans now control 53-47, requires winning red states like Ohio. Dr. Amy Acton, a Democrat who ran the Ohio Department of Health during the coronavirus pandemic, is already running for governor. Several Republicans are also in the race, including Vivek Ramaswamy, the Trump ally who ran for president last year, and Dave Yost, the Ohio Attorney General. Mr. Brown said the possibility that he could seek office again was not really material to his new institute. "I'll make a decision later about governor or senator," he said. "I don't really know if I want to run for office again." The first order of business for his group is to amplify the results of a poll it conducted that found a dismal and unstable outlook for American workers. The poll found that 60% of Americans had worked more than one job at a time, and that 20% said they had worked three jobs simultaneously. Those surveyed expressed anger at the country's economic system. Half of it said it needed to change, and 30% called for a complete overhaul. "The reality of America's anger at the system," Mr. Brown said, "does not comport with sunny portrayals of the economy from Mr. Trump and President Joseph R. Biden Jr. during their presidencies." Mr. Brown said the polling helped explain why voters in three straight presidential elections had chosen the candidate promising more change. Biden and Trump, they both cite the unemployment rate and decreasing rate of inflation. "But they're not really talking to workers and not really understanding workers' lives that way," Mr. Brown said. "Voters in 2020 chose Biden because they wanted change. In 2024, they voted for Trump because they wanted change again." And that was Sherrod Brown weighing a 2026 Senate bid starts a workers group by Reed J. Epstein, reporting from Washington, from NewYorkTimes.com, March 24th, 2025. Reed J. Epstein covers campaigns and elections from Washington. Before joining the Times in 2019, he worked at the Wall Street Journal, Politico, Newsday, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Right now, let's switch to Georgia, and this is from APnews.com. Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff vows defiance to Trump ahead of 2026 election, by Jeff Amy, for March 22, 2025. Atlanta. U.S. Senator John Ossoff came home to Atlanta Saturday to rally core Democrats desperate for effective action now against President Donald Trump's administration. "Georgia will bow to no king," Ossoff proclaimed at the end of a 20-minute speech that labeled Trump as corrupt, out of touch with the problems of regular people, and trying to poison our democracy with fear and intimidation. "Atlanta, this is not a drill. Atlanta, this is not a bad dream," said Ossoff, who could be the Republicans' number one Democratic target in the 2026 elections. "As citizens, this is the test of our lifetime. So tell me, Atlanta, are you ready to fight?" Ossoff's campaign tried to play down the idea that Saturday's event was the launch of his 2026 re-election campaign, and he never specifically asked the 2,000 Democrats gathered in a music hall on Atlanta's gentrified East Side for their votes. But others, including fellow Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock, made that explicit, and Ossoff's campaign handed out yard signs to people as they left. "It's still so early that it's not clear what Republicans will oppose the first-term Democrat. Many Republicans would like to see Georgia Governor Brian Kemp enter the race, but the second-term governor has been holding back a decision he could opt instead to run for president in 2028 or to retire from politics. If Kemp decides to run, Republicans, including U.S. Representatives Buddy Carter, Rich McCormick, and Mike Collins, could seek the nomination, as well as State Insurance Commissioner John King. U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has also mused about a possible run for Georgia governor or Senate in 2026. Any race in Georgia is likely to be closely contested and fantastically expensive. The twin Senate races in 2020, which Ossoff and Warnock narrowly won, flipped control of the Senate to Democrats. Cost more than $900 million combined, according to Open Secrets, which tracks political spending. Warnock's 2022 re-election over Republican Herschel Walker cost more than $470 million, Open Secrets found. Ossoff, keeping his focus off 2026, tried to speak to the alarm that Democratic voters say they are feeling and promising he was doing everything he could to fight back. Maybe right now you feel surrounded by darkness. You might be a little numb. You might be wondering if there's a way out, Ossoff said, but Atlanta, we don't have the luxury of despair. Ossoff tried to carve out a lane as a traditional senator who could do bipartisan work in his first 4 years. With Democrats restive and in the minority, he may be looking to shift his tone to something more antagonistic towards Trump. But some themes that Ossoff sounded Saturday are consistent with his first 4 years, including opposition to what he sees as corruption rooted in the influence of money in politics. That's why things don't work for ordinary people, Ossoff said. It's not because of trans kids or woke college students or because our new archenemy, Canada. The corruption is why you pay a fortune for prescriptions. The corruption is why your insurance claims keep getting denied. The corruption is why hedge funds get to buy up all the houses in your neighborhoods. Ossoff showcased people who said they're being harmed by Trump's policies, but in the hometown of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it wasn't hard to find others in the audience. Bev Roberts, attending with her mother, described herself as a Trump refugee, saying she was laid off by the U.S. Agency for International Development and forced to come home from Cairo. Like many Democrats, Roberts is unhappy with what she sees as ineffective opposition thus far. I want to hear practical solutions. I don't want to hear rhetoric, Roberts said before the speech. I think Democrats need to change. Some questioned whether a campaign rally was suited to this moment. Thomas McCormick, who drove 140 miles to Atlanta from the central Georgia town of Dublin, said he's not seeing any effective opposition from Democrats, with the possible exception of Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. He expressed disgust with Saturday's event and mused about supporting a third party, saying that Democrats can't wait until 2026, likening the impact of Trump's work so far to the explosion of the Hindenburg airship in 1937. That's 2 years of damage, McCormick said, as strains of Macarena echoed through the hall before the rally began. I have been on the left side of politics my whole life. This is the best I've got. And that was Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff vows defiance to Trump ahead of 2026 election by Jeff Amy from APnews.com for March 22nd, 2025. And Jeff Amy covers Georgia politics and state government for the Associated Press. He began working with the AP in 2011 and covered Mississippi for 8 years before transferring to the Atlanta Bureau in 2019. All right, let's switch now to governor's races and the governor's race in Iowa that'll be happening next year. Apparently, there's been a shakeup. This is from the DesMoinesRegister.com, and this is called A Wide Open Race: How Kim Reynolds' Surprise Decision Shakes Up Iowa's 2026 Elections, by Brianne Fennesteel and Sabine Martin, April 21st, 2025. Governor Kim Reynolds' surprise decision to forgo re-election in 2026 has reset the playing field in Iowa ahead of a consequential midterm season, scrambling the political dynamics expected to shape not just the governor's race, but contests up and down the ballot. Republicans haven't had an open primary for governor since 2010, and the implications of that opportunity immediately rippled through GOP circles as elected officials and others began weighing, some for the first time, their own gubernatorial ambitions. Democrats who had been girding for a bruising fight against Reynolds see a new glimmer of opportunity as Republicans lose their power of incumbency. I think it's going to be a wide open race, Iowa political consultant Jimmy Centers said. It's going to attract a lot of attention from both parties. Already a handful of potential Republican contenders have signaled they're open to running. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, who is widely viewed as a likely contender, has said she and her husband will pray and consider what this decision means for our future. A trio of legislative Republicans House Speaker Pat Grassley, Representative Bobby Kaufman, and Senator Mike Bosalat have said they're not ruling anything out. And Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig, NAIG, said he's keeping all options on the table. Others could be in the mix. Others who could be in the mix include U.S. Representatives Randy Feenstra, Ashley Hinson, and Zach Nunn. But U.S. Representative Marionette Miller Meeks has taken her name out of the running. Reynolds told reporters she does not plan to endorse in the primary race to succeed her. Whoever it is, they'll talk about their ideas and what's important, she said. And then whoever comes out of the primary, I'll be working every single day to do everything I can to help them get across the finish line. Amid the upheaval, Iowa political observers are all keeping an eye on the social media feed of exactly one person, President Donald Trump. Trump has become the center of gravity for Republican politics in Iowa. And if he decides to wade into a race by endorsing a candidate, it has the potential to clear the primary field. It would, at a minimum, make every other Republican contender think twice about their chances, Center said. If President Trump were to endorse, I think there would be a significant number of candidates that look at the realities of the situation from grassroots organizing, fundraising, coalition building, and realize there likely isn't a path for them, Center said. I don't know if it would completely clear the field, but it would certainly create a clear lane, if not an expressway to the nomination from whomever would be fortunate enough to get that endorsement in the Republican primary. Byrd endorsed Trump ahead of the 2024 GOP presidential caucuses when others were unwilling to take the risk. And she's taken the opportunity to endorse his agenda at every turn, even traveling to New York to support him while he was standing trial in a criminal hush money case. She is seen as a likely favorite to earn the president's support, but it's not a done deal. Kaufman is another possible contender who could lay claim to Trump's endorsement after working for his 2024 Iowa caucus campaign as a senior advisor. An Iowa native, Matt Whitaker, has now served in each of the Trump administrations, first as the acting U.S. Attorney General, and now as Trump's ambassador to NATO. Whitaker has not said whether he's interested in pursuing a good gubernatorial bid. But Trump could also choose to stay out of the race, letting Iowa Republicans fight it out on their own. That possibility would likely open up the field to a wider group of contenders. The president's endorsement, or lack thereof, is going to be a key factor in the GOP primary, independent political consultant Eric Wolfson said. Matthew Klein, a governor's races analyst at the Cook Political Report, said a Trump endorsement, although helpful in a primary, could ultimately come to hurt a gubernatorial candidate in a general election. Being an ally of Trump in Iowa has historically been a very positive thing for your brand because Trump is very popular, he said, but it's helpful until it isn't. Midterm elections historically have been harder for the party that holds the White House, with backlash to those policies trickling down through congressional and state races. Klein said Iowa could be especially vulnerable to the fallout associated with the Trump tariff policies. And if that discontent materializes in a big way, then I think it's not a given that Donald Trump will be the asset that he was. In 2018, the last midterm year of a Trump presidency, Democrats in Iowa won 3 of 4 congressional seats and came within 3 percentage points of winning the governor's office. In a competitive Republican primary election, Wilson said, the candidates will likely work to out-conservative each other by clinging closely to Trump. But of course, that creates the challenge always of how do you get back to the middle of the general election, he said. Still, many Iowa Republicans said it would be easier to run a campaign with Trump's endorsement than without it. An aggressive campaigner and strong fundraiser, Reynolds has been seen as a formidable figure going into the 2026 campaign cycle. And many Democrats are hoping that their path to the governor's mansion has been made easier with her departure from the race. But Reynolds also came with political baggage that Democrats could have tried to exploit throughout the campaign. Normally, when a governor retires, we move the race into a more competitive column because the party will lack the benefits of incumbency and have a known commodity, Klein said. But I don't think it's a given that this race is any more competitive now than it was with her in it. A Morning Consult survey released April 10 found that Reynolds was the most unpopular governor in the country for the fifth quarter in a row based on approval ratings. Her disapproval rating of 49% was the highest of any U.S. governor, and she was the only governor who was disliked by more voters than not. And many of Reynolds' positions have been polarizing. She drew the ire of Democrats over her implementation of a six-week abortion ban, a school choice program that uses taxpayer dollars to help send kids to private schools, and the removal of protections from transgender Iowans from the state's Civil Rights Act. And on the other side of the political spectrum, some Republicans have not forgiven her for endorsing Florida Governor Ron DeSantis ahead of the Iowa caucuses instead of Trump. She had already drawn a Republican primary challenger and Williamsburg pastor Brad Sherman. All those things could potentially have been weaponized against her. Iowa Democrats are signaled that they would work to tie other Republicans to Reynolds' policy choices. Every single Republican who was thinking about running for governor has spent the last decade rubber-stamping Kim Reynolds' unpopular agenda that has crushed Iowa's economy and created an environment where Iowans' personal income growth is not keeping up with the rest of the nation or with rising prices, Iowa Democratic Party Chair Rita Hart said in a statement. These folks ran for their current seats on promises that they'd lower prices for Iowans. Instead, they're focused on boosting their own political agendas while simultaneously casting votes and supporting cuts in Social Security and Medicaid. Klein noted that midterm elections can produce unexpected results, and Iowa has historically had sort of a tendency to swing. So it wouldn't surprise me if the race gets more competitive than some people might expect, he says. In past elections, Reynolds' popularity has created a massive coattail effect, helping to pull down ballot candidates across the finish line and into office. Without her helping to lead the ticket, it could leave a gap that other campaigns will need to step up and fill. Kim Reynolds ran incredibly strong campaigns, professional, organized campaigns that everyone benefited from, said Iowa Republican political consultant Luke Martz. She was just a tremendous candidate for us to have as a party. Reynolds' campaign organized a massive bus tour in 2022, inviting fellow Republican candidates to appear with her at events across the state, a move that many lauded as a key organizational tactic. Reynolds told reporters that she held 57 events during the 2024 election cycle, even though she wasn't on the ballot, and she plans to campaign on behalf of Republicans again. "That won't be any different," she said. "We'll do everything we can to make sure that it is held by a Republican." As politicians shift their ambitions, it will have implications across a range of races. "I think it's going to be a lot of opportunity for candidates to seek a wide variety of offices," Center said. "Certainly, depending on how this field shapes up for governor, you're going to have other statewide, perhaps even congressional and legislative races open." If Byrd decides to run for governor, it opens up the attorney general seat, for example. And if any of the congressional Republicans choose to run, it would open up a primary campaign to replace them. None in particular could cause a massive upheaval by foregoing re-election in the Democrat-targeted 3rd District. "It certainly has a cascading effect when a governor doesn't seek re-election," Center said. And that was a wide-open race, how Kim Reynolds' surprise decision shakes up Iowa's 2026 election, by Brianne Fenensteel and Sabine Martin, from the Des Moines Register.com for April 21st, 2025. Brianne Fenensteel is the chief politics reporter for the Des Moines Register. Reach her at bpfen@dmreg.com or 515-284-8244. Follow her on X at Brianne DMR. Sabine Martin covers politics for the Des Moines Register. She can be reached at email at sabine.martin@gannett.com or by phone at 515-284-8132. Follow her on X at Sabine F. Martin. All right, so with that, why don't we go through the list of potential and declared candidates in the races that we just talked about. Let's start with the race for Senator in Georgia, where the incumbent is in fact John Ossoff, and he has in fact declared that he is running for re-election. And on the Republican side, nobody has actually declared, but there are those that have expressed interest. Buddy Carter, U.S. Representative from Georgia's 1st Congressional District. Mike Collins, U.S. Representative from Georgia's 10th Congressional District. And that's only if Brian Kemp doesn't run. Marjorie Taylor Greene, U.S. Representative from Georgia's 14th Congressional District. Tyler Harper, Georgia's Agricultural Commissioner. And that's only if Kemp doesn't run. John King, Georgia's Insurance Commissioner, also if Kemp doesn't run. And Rich McCormick, U.S. Representative from Georgia's 7th Congressional District. Again, if Brian Kemp doesn't run. Potential is, of course, Brian Kemp, who is the current governor of Georgia, along with Brad Raffensperger, Georgia's Secretary of State. Declined is Andrew Clyde, U.S. Representative from Georgia's 9th Congressional District. He is running for re-election. Brian Kemp, although undeclared, has gotten the endorsements of U.S. Senator Tim Scott, U.S. Representative Mike Collins, and among local officials, Eric Erickson, former Macon County City Councilor. And among predictions in the general election, as of February 20th, Inside Elections ranks that as a battleground. On February 13th, the Cook Political Report made it a toss-up. Sabato's Crystal Ball ranks it a toss-up as of March 12th. And Race to the White House, as of March 28, 2025, has it tilting Democrat. Let's cover Ohio. This is actually a special election to fill out the rest of the term held by J.D. Vance before he became vice president. The appointed senator is John Husted, and he has declared he will go for the full term. And among Democratic candidates, nobody has officially declared, but as reported earlier on, former Senator Sherrod Brown has publicly expressed interest, as has Tim Ryan, a former U.S. representative from Ohio's 13th Congressional District and nominee for U.S. Senate in 2022. Potentials include Allison Russo, the minority leader of the Ohio House of Representatives and nominee for Ohio's 15th Congressional District in the 2021 special election. Declining to run are Chantel Brown, U.S. Representative from Ohio's 11th Congressional District, Greg Landsman, U.S. Representative from Ohio's 1st Congressional District, and Emilia Sykes, Representative from Ohio's 13th Congressional District. And as far as predictions are concerned, Inside Elections as of February 20th has this as a solid Republican. The Cook Political Report as of February 13th has this as a likely Republican. Sabato's Crystal Ball for March 12th, 2025, has this also as a likely Republican. However, Race to the White House as of April 8th, 2025, has this as a toss-up. And we also covered the race for Iowa governor. That'll be happening next year. As previously reported, Kim Reynolds is not running for re-election. And among Republicans, declared candidates are Brad Sherman, former state representative from the 91st District. That's not our Brad Sherman, by the way. And formed exploratory committee is Mike Bosalut, a state senator from the 21st District. And publicly expressing interest was Brenna Byrd, the attorney general, Pat Grassley, the speaker of the Iowa House of Representatives, Bobby Kaufman, a state representative from the 82nd District, Mike Naig, Iowa's Secretary of Agriculture, Zach Nunn, U.S. Representative from Ohio's 3rd Congressional District, and Amy Sinclair, President of the Iowa Senate. Potentials include Randy Feenstra, U.S. Rep from the 4th District, Ashley Hinson, U.S. Rep from the 2nd District, Bob Vander Plaats, CEO of the Family Leader and nominee for Lieutenant Governor in 2006, and candidate for governor in 02, 06, and 10, and Matthew Whitaker, U.S. Ambassador to NATO, who was also a nominee for State Treasurer in 2002 and a candidate for U.S. Senate in 2014. Among Democrats, the only declared candidate at this time is someone named Pat Dahl, a bus driver and perennial candidate, and publicly expressing interest is Rob Sand, an Iowa auditor of the state from 2019 to the present. And as far as predictions are concerned, on January 23rd, 2025, the Cook Political Report had it as a solid Republican, but Inside Elections, as of February 6, 2025, has this as a battleground. So We'll see how it shapes, folks. These are only predictions as they are happening right now. We all know things can change in a heartbeat, and they will. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun. Happy voting and peace. See you next time, everybody.